Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are again, finally.
Finally.
To talk about the stock market and what's going on. Of course, we didn't really miss anything.
No.
But today, by the way, is 3/12/2013. But the market, just as we took a hiatus, took off. And tell us what happened.
Well, I mean, you know, the market has an unbelievable bid to it right now, which is, you know, you have to wonder what that's all about. Could it be the fact that the Japanese government continues to, every moment that they can, put pressure on the yen and sell it off? It hit about 95. Is it some hope that the economy in the U.S. is better? We'll talk about jobs a little bit. Is it hope that earnings are going to get better? I question that. Or is it just all of a sudden investors are on a rampage and it seems like, you know, everybody's buying, so hey, I'll join the party. And a lot of stocks seem to be getting questionably valued at a level too high. And on top of that, we saw, the Fed, of course, as soon as the market took a small drop, even into the negative territory, the Fed comes out and starts their little parade of speakers talking about how, you know what, we're going to, you know, we'll leave this open spigot of money on for some time. So, but the yen that's a big issue that I think is really fascinating. You know, the yen hitting 95, the dollar hitting 82, the Dixie, the euro hitting 129s and 130, yet markets, which should be very much, concerned about that, don't seem to be too concerned.
No. Well, you know, one explanation is that it's the safest place to put your money right now because everything's uncertain. And American equities have always been like a good place to. And then there's, of course, the perceived, or the this year is supposed to be the collapse of the bond market.
Right.
Which everyone talks about, which means it's not going to happen, at least until they stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that right?
Right. Exactly right.
So when they stop talking about it, it's going to collapse. And I think people are already kind of slipping out into equities and, you know, and keeping this thing. And nobody's selling. I think that's the other thing. If you buy a stock and just hang on to it forever and everybody else does the same thing, they don't sell for whatever reason. They don't feel like taking profits. They don't feel like anything. It's just everything's just going to ratchet up because there's not going to be anything floating around to buy and sell.
Well, there's also a bit more money flowing into ETFs and mutual funds, and that's a sign that the individual investor, the retail investor, is starting to creep back into the market. And you have to look at that, though, as potentially a contrarian signal, seriously, because, you know, if the retail investor has been out of the market for such a long time in mass and money's sitting on the sidelines in cash or bonds or alternative investments – and they missed the big rally, how could you then say that, well, when they're getting in is a good time to also get in? That makes no sense.
No, but there was somebody that was talking about this as a classic bull market, which has three phases.
Right.
And we're into phase three. And what you're talking about, of course, is the guys getting in early, which no, but they never do. The public never. I don't either because I'm too dumb. But the public is particularly stupid, and they always wait till the end. And the third phase, which is this one, usually results in another 35% run-up.
It could. I mean, yeah, because you have the first stage. It's kind of like the the multiple stages of grief, right?
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. And when it crashes, of course, then we'll get to see that.
Right. So you have the denial.
It's not crashing.
Right. Or it's not going up. It can't be. And then you have the kind of like the acceptance.
Wow.
And
which is the time that people will start to buy the stocks
and then the
smart
next
money
one
gets out.
Right. No, but after acceptance, if it's the third phase right now, it's the belief.
Oh, right. Then you're done. Right.
Right. Then, you know, then what? Then it's like, you know, then you go back to denial when it goes start going down, right? You go back to denial and say, oh, nah, it's gonna, this thing's going to keep going up and it keeps going down. Then it goes down. And you get back into, you know, that next level of acceptance. All right, it's going down. All right, what am I going to do? And then you get into the belief again that it's always going to stay down. And that's when they get out. Right? That's the routine.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yep. So, but also, I think that the the idea that the Fed's going to be there forever and that interest rates are going to stay down forever. I mean, it's kind of been ingrained right now, and most people have forgotten about
it. It's totally impossible.
Right. Exactly.
But so, it is free money. And somebody admitted, I think it was, what's his name, is out on the guy from the New York Times, the columnist, that won a.
Krugman?
No, not Rubin. He's actually
Krugman. Krugman.
Krugman, yeah. Krugman. Yeah.
Paul Krugman.
Krugman's out pounding the pavement. I guess he got a book or something, but he's pounding the pavement with the thesis, which is not a bad thesis, which is things are great. And even though there's, you know, nobody's employed and the economy's really not good, but his argument, which I think is valid, is that now is the time to go deeply in debt because money's so cheap. Borrow money when it doesn't cost anything. What difference does it make? Deep,
exactly. I mean, he's big into, you know, acquiring as much debt as you can, and particularly on the government side.
Yeah.
Might as well just keep on acquiring.
Because the interests are so – I mean, you don't want to start borrowing money when the interest rate's 10%, but if it's 1%, borrow all you can get a hold of. Now, this is all fine and dandy, but if I want to go borrow some money from my bank to do some home improvements, I can't get it.
Right. And the other thing is that isn't there a point that – you have too much debt that you can't deal with the debt service, and it is an adjustable rate that one day is going to come collapse. This is exactly what happened with the individuals. They went out and borrowed all sorts of money at cheap rates, adjustable rate mortgages, said, hey, everything's going to be better in the future. I'll be able to pay this off. And then things didn't work out as they thought, and it collapsed. The government is doing the exact same thing. You think they would have learned? Nope.
No.
Not going to happen. No.
But I do think the market's going to continue on upward.
Well,
pattern.
I mean, I think there needs to be a correction here because I think it's kind of gone on a little bit outside. I mean, now listen, 1 year from now is a whole different story. I'm talking about in the shorter term. You know, earnings clearly are not at the level from the projection of corporate executives and from their various discussions that we've heard at last earnings reports. There's a lot of concern out there. The dollar is higher. Exporters like Caterpillar, which is one of my favorite shorts right now. You know, you think about Caterpillar. So they make these trucks and these big machineries and all this, right? And they sell it internationally, globally. And one of their big competitors is in China, right? You know, there's a couple of them, actually.
Yeah.
That are now, all of a sudden, the yen is 17% or so below the value of the dollar over the last couple of months, right? So you have a choice to buy a machine, a truck, a whatever it may be, a backhoe, pickup truck, a dump truck from Caterpillar or from, you know, pick your couple of different companies that are in China. And I mean, in Japan. And so now all of a sudden the pricing difference is much more in favor of the Japanese equipment. So who are you going to buy from? I mean, clearly, if it's, you know, somewhat on the same scale and it's the same product, if you can get like a 10 or 15% discount because of the currency valuation, why not?
Yeah.
So I see Caterpillar having a big old problem coming up. Hmm. I don't think investors have really seen as much. I mean, it was down today nicely, but and again, we're short Caterpillar over the last, I don't know, about a week ago. But here's one of the things, just to stick on the government discussion, and I totally love this. The United States government, the Department of Agriculture, is likely to be buying sugar in the domestic market. They're just going to go out and buy sugar because it seems that they need to drive prices up to prevent default on loans that they made to the sugar processors. So they made all these loans. Sugar's dropping in price. They may not have enough money, and they may go bankrupt, these various sugar farms and producers. And in order to make sure they get their loan, they're going to go buy sugar. Oh, I mean, this is how we operate. It's a little nutty, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing, especially since we're really our government's actually promoting high fructose corn syrup. Seems to me that they would want to run up the price of sugar to help the high fructose corn guys.
You know what? Who knows what the reasons are these days with things, but it's crazy. I mean, we've seen other countries talk about, and even the Japanese, they're back to talking about how they'll even buy stocks directly in the markets.
The government?
Not, yeah, oh yeah. They've done that before. They go out and not as obscure and kind of, you know, behind the scenes as our government is with giving away money. They go right at, hey, we're going to buy some stocks. Talk about a great plan of, a repurchase agreement. I want to talk about China for a second because I thought this was an interesting story. Did you see this whole thing about all these dead pigs in the river, this particular river?
Yeah, this was great. It was actually, wasn't it a water reservoir?
Yeah, it was some kind of.
There's some like 40,000 dead pigs or something.
Well, I don't know. I thought at first it was 3,000, then I saw it was 4,000. Now it's up to like 5,500.
Oh, I thought it was a bigger number than that, but it was lots of dead pigs.
Lots.
And this is drinking water for the town of Shanghai.
Yeah, not good.
Well, it's apparently got some Japanese upset.
Well, why Japanese?
I'm sorry, what did I say? Chinese, I meant.
Yeah, Chinese.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the story that we saw on TV recently that this, I don't know if this is kind of gross, but there was this woman who was, I guess, killed, and they hid her, the killer hid her body inside of the water tank at this hotel. And it wasn't found for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. So all the people that are like brushing their teeth and taking showers.
Oh, God.
Or taking showers and brushing their teeth with decomposed body in the water. Ugh, that is just gross. Anyway, it's kind of the same story here with the pigs. The question is, who's dumping all these pigs and what's the story? I mean, why are they getting rid of all these, you know, that's a lot of pigs.
I know there's something's amiss.
Yeah, it's not fishy. It's porky. But so that's going on in China. Lots of things going on in China these days, as a matter of fact. But I thought was, you know, to add on to the China story, you know, luxury goods in the U.S. and around the world and global providers are starting to have some problems. You see some of the shares of like Tiffany's, Michael Kors, and a variety of others really starting to tank a bit. And one of the reasons is that, number one, the yen, back to that again, the yen is devalued. So the Japanese don't have the same money to go buy the product, right? As a matter of fact, there are many companies that are actually increasing their prices inside of Japan because they are getting, you know, the exchange rate they need to make up for. So the Japanese are going to be paying a higher price with their own currency. The second thing is that in China, there's been a clampdown. Now, you know, there's more billionaires. You know what profession the mass of billionaires has in China, what that profession is?
Manager.
Government.
Oh, government. That's right. That's right. That was a special on TV about it. It was government. It's all government workers.
Which is shocking.
Well, you know, I think Bill Clinton's going to be a billionaire mostly from being a government worker.
Okay, but that's one. Mm. I mean, maybe two. You know, it was whatever. But but just amazing how government. And he was the president also. But you know, it's amazing how you have all these billionaires. Well, one of the big things is that they seemingly freely spend money on all sorts of things, and they, you know, for all sorts of reasons, right? They have a lunch with somebody, and they're going to bring them, you know, cigars, and this, you know, they're going to pop a bottle of this really expensive whiskey, and this thing that they have over there, this special.
Yeah, they know how to party.
Well, the government's clamping down on that, saying, "Hey, no more. You're not going to be, you know, spending all that money on these luxury items." So, what you used to be able to, I guess, push through your expense account, like maybe a watch and a bag and a bottle of whiskey for lunch.
Watch and a bag. Yeah, I went out to lunch. What did you cost you? It cost me about $45,000 for the lunch.
Anyway, online gaming is kind of making its way again. You remember something? That online gaming was shut down a few years ago, and one of the lead players in that was Harry Reid from the great state of Nevada.
Right.
And at the time, it was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, I guess he doesn't want the competition for Nevada. You know, it was kind of like questionable. Well, of course, you kind of fast forward a couple of years, and, you know, he's one of the biggest advocates for online gaming now, but to be done by domestic companies. So Christie over in New Jersey approves some kind of bill that approves online gaming in New Jersey. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you do that? How do you police – how does that work? I mean, if I'm Florida, can I online game, play, you know, gaming for money and with a New Jersey – how does that work? I mean, if it's illegal everywhere else, right, state by state. So that was kind of weird.
It's a quagmire, I guess. I don't know how to say it, but I know that there's probably way – if you're a gambler and you're living in Florida and you want to gamble in a New Jersey online casino.
Yeah.
There's tons of ways to figure it out.
Right. So now, all of a sudden, there's some companies that are in play. You look at a company that, you know, that's just gone to hell in a handbasket, but like a Glu Mobile, they all of a sudden have online gaming for money. Now you have people thinking, hey, Zynga's interesting because they have the, you know, that. Then there's also a couple other companies like Caesars, who has a foothold in the online gaming. But we'll see what happens because there was some, after Christie did his deal, the government of New Jersey, I guess the Supreme Court, somebody struck it down, and they're going back and forth. So I'm not sure what the deal is going to be on this. What do you think? Is it going to happen?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact the states are all broke. When right. they're broke, they just find other ways to steal your money. I mean, more expensive parking tickets, like you might get in San Francisco. A scam that's going on in New York. I was almost ran out of, I may have to still have the clip for the No Agenda show. Apparently, all the parking meters at least half of all the parking meters in Manhattan that one of these TV stations WPIX had tested. You put in a quarter to get 17 minutes. Let's say. You get 7 minutes.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. And all these meters, whatever you put in, you wouldn't get what you thought you were going to get. And now, the worst part about this is one of those screw jobs because it's you get these little tags. It's like Berkeley has these. You put your money in and it tells you you're going to get like 17 minutes and a tag comes out with 7 minutes on it. So what are you going to do? You got to put the tag in your car and then you got to run around for 7 minutes and then get another tag, or it's just a scam.
And then if you don't have it, they ticket you.
Yeah, and the tickets are high.
Oh, I like it. Nice. Oh, good old New York. Gotta love it. WPIX, that was Channel 11. That's when I used to watch Star Trek on every night. Yeah, that was when you had, what do we have, 8 channels or something like that?
Yeah.
Remember those days?
There's more now.
Yeah, there's a lot more. Still the same amount of TV is on, though.
Yeah, same. Yeah, still nothing. It's still junk.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. Okay, so I wanted to also talk about... So just to get back to this rally issue, so the recent move in stocks and this never-ending bid that you see. So I kind of was really trying to think about what is the essence of this rally? What is it, you know, what can I sum this all up and to say? Because we're seeing stocks, you know, come out with earnings. They get just flushed after hours when they come out. The next day, they're not looking good. And all of a sudden, you know, you blink your eyes and you're like, wait a minute, that was down like 12% and now it's, you know, up 2%. Or today, a company that we had for a while and we sold, but SCLA, which is I can't remember the name of the stock now. Oh, boy. That's what happens, I guess, folks. But anyway, the stock is down like 12% after somebody comes in with a big old offering and dumps some shares. It finished down 7% on a kind of questionable tape. Point is, though, that we're seeing a lot of breakdowns fail. Breakouts on the upside are doing very well, or, you know, we're seeing stocks hit, you know, really high numbers and 52-week highs, some all-time highs. So I was thinking about, you know, all this kind of negative news and this kind of stock by stock or, you know, the whole economy. Where can I sum this up? And I thought nothing better than one word, Boeing. If you think about all the things that have happened to Boeing recently, have you heard any good news from Boeing?
Well... Not really. I mean, I did hear that they figured out the problem with the, the little battery backup, what it's called, an AP something or other.
But there's really, and there was some good news today. I'll give you that after hours, there was some news that some test flights are going to resume and things like that. But really, I mean, you know, the battery issue was a conundrum for a while. And it was a big question, a big issue. And then you had the shutdown of all the flights on the 787s. And then on top of that, there was some question as to, well, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's something else going on here besides just the batteries. So when you think about all that, you know, you would think, just to step back and think about this, what should have the stock done? I mean, during all this conversation that was going on over the last couple of months.
Should have gone down.
Should have gone down. I mean, does it have to go down a lot? It should have at least not.
Should have relaxed a little bit.
A little bit. Should have relaxed till all the news was out. Oftentimes you have people. But I want to show you a chart. See, I gave you a little chart there. I want to show you a chart of what Boeing has done.
Boeing. Where's the Boeing chart? Oh, here it is.
Now click that. This is a weekly chart.
Yeah, that's good.
Boeing, I don't even think it sneezed. It kind of sniffled in 2013.
When that battery thing happened, it would have been a good time to invest.
Yeah, great time to
invest. Well, let's just buy on bad news.
Yeah, but it only slipped maybe from 77 to 75. I mean, maybe it went to 72.5 for a moment.
Yeah. No, it's been on a rampage.
And now it's
at
84, which is like a 5-year high.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So here's the deal, folks. If North Korea launches a nuclear attack, both hands and both feet start buying stocks.
Yeah, go long.
Just go long everything. You know, go long South Korea. You might as well. That's going to be the hardest hit area, right? But that's kind of, I think this is a summation of what's gone on recently in the market, that there is no fear, and that you can see by the VIX at, 12-ish, was sub-12 yesterday. which was pretty amazing. But you know, with the, there's no fear, there's a complacency. There's, you know, it's not like you said, it's not that they're buying with, you know, crazy. It's that there's no selling. There's no, every time the selling pressure is met with buying, the bull, the bears are exhausted. The bulls are kind of, you know, doing their thing, having a party. So everybody likes a winner, I guess. So the markets are doing well. I do believe that we're getting a little bit stretched on not only valuation, but frankly, on an overbought feature. You know, when we're looking at kind of the number of stocks that are advancing versus declining, the recent trend. You look at the put call ratio, complacency, VIX, and all that. We're seeing, I think we need a correction here, a healthy correction. It doesn't have to be a, you know, a bombshell down, but healthy correction. What do you think?
Nah.
Okay. Good.
The reason I'm saying that is because once this thing starts hitting new highs, I think people are going to start. It gets attention. And I think the amount of attention it gets from the psychological attention it gets from, new high, I think bring new people in, and they're the ones who negate the necessary correction, which I think should be at least 1,000 points. It should be more. But I just don't think it's – I don't think we're going to – I mean, I'd be surprised if we see more than just a few hundred – you know, if it, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we never saw a correction for a couple of months.
Well, right now we're holding on to, I think, the deepest correction we've seen is, I think we had a 1.5% drop for a day or so.
Yeah.
And then today there was a drop of about, the yen started really picking up steam. And midday there was some discussion about some new rules in Europe and a few things. And next thing you know, I think the futures were down 7 or 8 on the S&P. But in the end, because we do think that it's possibly a crime right now to have the Dow close in the red. It just squeaked out a gain right in the end. You know, just a couple of points. S&P was down. NASDAQ was down. Apple was down pretty hard. A lot of people are predicting a sub 400 on Apple soon, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah. Well, it would have been a nice short at 700.
Yeah. Well, sure. We have one. I have a.
It might
idea
still for, be a nice short.
It may be. I have a nice short idea coming up for this evening's little game we play. Listen, your best friend, Carl Icahn.
Ah, good old Carl.
Carl's been busy. He's what, 77 years old?
Yeah, troublemaker, that guy.
He is a troublemaker.
He's like a 77-year-old troublemaker.
Oh, he is in there.
I'd like to work for that guy for a while just to see what he does, because he must just be a nasty fellow. Or that, or he's just laughing all the way to the bank. I can't tell. He hasn't made any really great moves recently. I mean, his Yahoo, maybe his Yahoo thing's starting to get back on it. I think he sold out.
I think
Dell thing.
Well, I think that he's first of all, I think it's possible. I'm just kind of, I don't know any of this, but it just seems like he's making a lot of waves lately. I think he's kind of feeling his age maybe and trying to make sure that he proves that he's still got it.
Yeah,
and
it could be.
His last hoorah kind of thing, you know, let's really rock it up. You know, his recent foray into Dell, where he's, you know, shaking up, and, you know, he does a lot of talking, this guy.
Yeah, he's actually a green mailer, it seems to me.
Yeah, yep. You know, he's like, Dell should be getting a better price. You know, that's like, you know, you're standing in a jewelry store, you're just watching two people decide on a sale.
And then you're kibitzing.
Yeah, you're like, hey
what is that all you're going to get for her?
Oh, my God, what a rip.
Aren't you getting married? Are you going to marry this cheap bastard? You know, you better get a better ring, dude. Yeah, that's what you need in a jewelry shop. Okay, as a shill. Do you think it was wise for Dell to open the books to this guy?
I don't know. You know, I guess, I mean, why not? Listen, first of all, if they didn't open up the books to him, although who knows where he's going to go with this, the board shareholders may say, hey, wait a minute. You know, you're going private and you're taking us out at $13, $14 a share. And he's saying it's $20 a share. Now, let me take you through this, because this is bizarre. First, he says, here's how I got my valuation. We look at the Dell price, and we looked at what the average analyst has as a price target. I'm thinking, analyst price targets? That's interesting to look at, don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
come
right.
on.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't do your own work and come up with the valuation? And then you're using analysts who are notoriously high or adjusting their price into any move, right?
Yeah.
And then he says,
useless.
And he believes that they should be paying about a $7, I think it was $7, some ridiculous number, 7%, $7, I think it was $7. It couldn't have been $7. It was, like a, it was some ridiculous amount, like a $5 special dividend. And he, this is his free thinking of this. So he added that. And it came up with $20. I think, how do you come up with an how do you come up with a special dividend and adding it to the higher numbers? And then, you know, boy, talk about blatherings. That was the most, honestly, I thought of the most pathetic analysis next to his discussion of Herbalife, which we'll get to, because he's just, he seems to be working on a little an emotional
mover. He's doing
something.
I mean, I would love to, I could get a hold of Michael Dell, who I do know and talk to every so often. But I actually am reluctant to do it because I know what he'd do. He'd just go ballistic.
Yeah. I'm sure this is not making him very happy.
No.
So Icahn then also, he's also involved in this whole Herbalife situation, right? He steps in and he says, hey, Herbalife, man, this guy Ackman, who came out with his 320-page discussion point by point, five-hour presentation, huge amount of data to and back up and research. I think he's wrong. Well, why do you think he's wrong, Carl? Because I think it's a good company. Well, okay, great. So, okay. And I'm going to buy, just to prove it, I'm going to buy a 10% stake in the company. So, God knows what research he did to compare, right? But remember something, we've talked about this 100 times. He has a vendetta against Ackman. There's no question about that, right? We know that. They had a big fight on TV. They owed him for, Ackman owed him some money for something, supposedly. I don't know. Anyway.
Right.
Then he goes and he steps in again. You know what? We're going to do something to raise the stake to upwards of 15%. Okay, does that. Now we look at some of the things, and he's actually only buying, he's buying options. He's not really buying the stake of the company. Okay, okay. Stock goes up a bunch, comes right back down. Then he says, Herbalife is taking myself and two other people from my company onto their board. Stock goes up a little bit, comes down. And he's out there still talking about how he thinks this is a good company and absolutely not a pyramid scheme. Again, with I didn't see any research, you know, of any substance. He doesn't have to show me. But, you know, you're going against a guy who may be totally wrong, but has done a tremendous amount of research to stand by what he's saying. And Icahn, with the intent to squeeze the crap out of this guy, knowing that he also has this big JCPenney position that is, you know, that's not doing so well, by the way. The only reason why I did well recently is on the rumor that Ron Johnson may be leaving.
Yeah, which is the ironic part about it, because Martha Stewart's in court because she did a deal with Ron Johnson, went on and on about how what a genius she thought he was. And
yeah, he was a genius because he helped her screw the deal that she had with Macy's.
Yeah, well, it takes a genius.
She had exclusive with Macy's to only carry her products, his home products, whatever, inside of Macy's in the Macy's stores. She could not be in any store. She could have some of her own something or others, right? So what she do? She opens up kiosks inside of JCPenney, like little, like you know, that's her territory. So it's like a store within a store, so it's not really in JCPenney's.
Right.
Really?
You know, that's her argument. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
So, you know, just crazy stuff going on there. But Martha Stewart, I hope she doesn't get up. Well, maybe she could get into jail again, maybe?
No. No. She just gets sued. There's nothing she's doing that's criminal.
So I don't know if you looked at actually the Icahn Enterprises after you got out with that nice profit. But take a look at that chart I gave you there. I gave you another chart of this. This went up to about 90, I don't know, 2? Or right, maybe at 90. It shot up in the beginning of this year and then went straight up all the way up to about 90 and then came down, slammed down, and just sitting there at about the 60, I don't know, what, 61 and a quarter. So was it really interesting when I look at this chart? Look at where it just sat forever, right? Right in the 40, 35, 40 range?
Yeah.
In 2013, started to move.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So
then it's now it's stuck at 73, 72, whatever.
61.
61. Oh, 61. Oh, yeah. That's right. It fell. It took that big dive.
All right. Let's see what else I got. Okay. Here's something you're going to love this. Well, we're going to talk about Netflix in a second. But, you know, there's this recent stress test that was done for the banks. Last week, I guess they were supposed to wait till this week. But, you know, another round of stress tests that the, you know, Fed's going to do and, you know, however they come up with what they come up with to make sure they have enough tier one capital, they have enough to withstand like an 11% unemployment rate and a severe recession, blah, blah, blah. So they go through this kind of stress test, which may or may not be the right numbers to put on the banks, maybe light, maybe heavy. out of about 17 banks, one failed. So that's good.
Right? Yeah, sounds good on paper.
Yeah, that's good. The only one that failed was Alley Bank. That was the old General Motors Financial.
Yeah.
Jim. Now, what does that one bank have that's different than all the other banks? I was kind of wondering, what is it? Why are they not doing so? I'm thinking to myself, what is it? There's something that is kind of like right on the tip of my tongue as I'm looking at this. I'm like, what is it that is different about this particular company? It's the only company in the list that's not publicly traded.
Hmm.
So if you have to fail somebody,
yeah,
why not fail the one that won't have any public exposure to getting a stock smashed?
Right. Or so you think the whole thing was rigged?
It's just a little fishy.
Yeah, it would make it.
It's the same thing. Listen, it's the same story over and over and over. Come on. It's the same crap.
That's one of your themes.
It's the same thing. It's just
a
joke.
Yeah, it's like all the good numbers that come out, then they'll correct them next month. They weren't so good.
Yeah.
That's another theme of yours.
Yeah, it's just...
Which is amazing to me because it happens over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then the thing that got me is these great job numbers that came out. Of course, there's been kind of looked at askance by many a people. But if you take a look at your buddies over there at Shadow Stats,
oh yeah,
unemployment's still going up. The government numbers have been going down, and the unemployment numbers have been going up for two or three, 4 months now.
Yep.
One's going in one direction, and the real numbers are going in one direction, and the government numbers are going in the other direction very firmly. It's like, this isn't good.
Well, I mean, one of the big things is the labor participation rate continues to go down, and that's the equivalent of my other thing, which is how earnings go up when companies do big stock buybacks.
Right.
And another theme.
That's
what we haven't brought up the shoes in a while.
We should do a little book with the main themes that we keep harping on. It's the same thing over and over again, essentially.
So the thing is that when you see the labor participation rate going down, forgetting all the math involved, bottom line is that if you have the same exact number of people working, your unemployment rate gets better. So it's a statistical anomaly. The second thing is that one of the big issues that some people were reporting that when they looked at the jobs numbers, there was a lot of potential second – I don't know how they figured this out, but a lot of second jobbers. So like the one guy has to get a second job.
Right, a lot of people with two jobs.
And then a lot of part-timers.
Right.
Which could bode well for the economy in the future, but who knows. There was some – I'm going with the number. I what's the point of fighting? It is what it is. It's on paper. Fine. The only thing that's been really a concern of mine is the manufacturing numbers that I've seen recently. Factory numbers on inventories are rising. Sales are dropping. Manufacturing in the regional areas like the Philly Fed was just horrible last month. Durable goods was not so good. And, you look at all this and you add it up, but yet we see an ISM manufacturing number that was about, I think it was 54. And I wonder how that's all possible when you see the potential for, if inventories are rising, manufacturers are going to slow down on their production, sales are dropping, they're going to slow down even more so they don't have an inventory overload, regionals are slowing down, yet the main manufacturing number stays solid. Very confusing to me. It really makes no sense.
Maybe this is a worldwide theme. We're always pointing the finger at China for phoning up their numbers. Maybe we're pointing to distract people from noticing that we're phoning up our numbers.
And if, in fact, we are, and the end product is that we instilled investor confidence and consumer participation, as well as confidence by businesses in the economy, is there anything wrong with that?
Yes.
Sure. Okay, what's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it is it comes back to bite you in the butt at some point. You got an inflated situation that crashes. You actually create a bubble with false confidence, I think.
I don't disagree with you, but if that is the case, I mean, it is, the old Machiavellian economic approach, and, they believe that in the future it will be better. Listen, the government...
Oh, no, this is the same. This is the housing. This is how the housing bubble happened, because, I can't afford the house. I'll lie a little bit. Who's going to know? Because this house is going to become worth twice as much, and I can sell it, and then the profits I can get in legitimately to the next house and ratchet my way up to becoming a millionaire buying and selling my home.
Right. I mean, it is a little nutty. Although I got to tell you something, there are a lot more wealthy people these days. I mean, the billionaire list has grown. I was at a charity event the other night. Now, it happened to be with the Miami Heat basketball players. And I got to tell you something. there was some nice cars there.
Those guys drive good cars. Well, they have to drive cars that are oversized, so they have a lot of Bentleys.
It was this Lamborghini.
Lamborghini. That new Lamborghini is gorgeous. Oh,
I was like, I walked outside. I said, what in the world is that? So I'm standing there looking at it. This girl comes over. Is this your car? Sure is.
Yeah.
Would you like to take a ride? She says, this is my husband right here. I said, can I take your wife for a ride? It kind of ended at that point when my wife comes out and says, hey, whose car is this?
Yeah, that would do
it. It's mine. She goes, what are you talking about? So, beautiful car. But there was...
I do have a Lamborghini tip for anybody out there who wants to hear it.
Good. That's important.
Yeah, I ran into some Lamborghini guy who was a... I've known a number of people that have them, and they call them Lambos.
Yeah, Lambos.
And this guy gave me a lecture. He says, the one thing I don't know why, because I'm not in the market for one, but he says, the one thing everyone has to know about a Lamborghini is that you buy them new and you sell them before the warranty runs out, because it's almost to the second that the warranty runs out, and then the car starts to fall apart.
Well, I mean, I think that somebody that has a warranty, a Lamborghini, probably is going to have it not as their main, like, car.
Actually, both Ferrari owners and Lamborghini owners that are really serious about it, they drive these cars. And the Ferrari guys, there's only one factory Ferrari guy in the factory facility in the whole country, and it's in Marin County. And they'll tell you that you should be driving these things. If you put it in the garage, it's just going to rot.
Well, this is a beautiful car. This new thing is the matte finish. Have you seen these?
Oh, right, right. Some guy was driving around. What car was it? It was a BMW or something with this new finish that it looks. I think this paint was the stealth paint. There's some paint out there you can paint your car supposedly, and the radar guns can't see it.
It looks like primer.
Yeah, it does. It looks like primer is what it looks like. Exactly.
Right?
It looks like a little darker than normal primers.
It looks like the people who like paint their cars halfway when they put the new door on, just, something like that. That's good.
I'm not a fan of that either. I just don't see the appeal.
Exactly. So I was looking at Netflix recently. You know, Netflix, you said, had a great new special, The House of Cars, that you watched from start to finish, right?
I haven't seen it yet.
You watched?
No.
What do you mean you haven't seen it? I thought we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't seen it. You wrote all about it, but you haven't seen it.
I haven't written anything. Well, I wrote about Netflix and how I thought this was a genius idea, and I think they're going in the right direction, becoming a production company and all the rest of it. But I still haven't seen the thing, and I just took everybody's word.
So you wrote about Netflix and how great you thought this was.
I never said... I never said I watched it.
I understand that, but I got to tell you something. The takeaway when I read it was that you watched it.
Oh, you were misled.
Okay, well...
But that's not the reason I was basing that article on, I wasn't solely basing it on the quality of that product. I was basing it on the idea of the product.
But the idea of the product is that you do a series and you just throw it all on to grab it as, all at once in one package. You can watch it as quickly as you want or as slowly as you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now...
The future of television, I might add.
Well, that's great for... us. What about advertisers? Now, I understand we don't want to see the advertising. We can skip forward and all that. But isn't that a big source of revenue for these shows?
Yep.
So you're saying that, and for the distributors.
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge.
I have Hulu Plus.
Yeah.
I buy Hulu, and I still get commercials.
Yeah, but there's like two of them.
Yeah, there's this short. And so you're saying that it's better, and it's better for the company or better for the consumer?
Well, it's better for the company Netflix insofar as, moving, keeping people subscribed. It's better for the consumer for a lot of reasons. Obviously, one of them is the continuity of the show without being interrupted constantly. It's really bad for the big networks and horrible for the advertisers or anybody who produces shows that cost millions of dollars. The rule of thumb for a show on a network is that you get $1 per viewer. So if you have typically like NCIS, I think, has like 13, 14 million viewers. So they get a $14 million budget mm-hmm. per show. and it all stems from advertisers. I mean, nobody's just giving them money. And with the advertising model close to falling apart, which is what's going to happen with all this new stuff, these new ideas and IPTV and you know, Hulu and Netflix and there's a lot of things that are going to kill it. And the DVR, of course, was the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to survive unless they can radically change their model without you know, being too corny. I don't know how they're going to do it. It just seems like a huge challenge. But on the other hand, I don't think they need these budgets like that. Mad Men is a low-budget show, essentially. It doesn't have a $14 million budget. It's nice that you can have that kind of a budget, but I don't know if these guys can't do a cheaper job. J.J. Abrams, when he did Alias, he never had a big budget for that show. And he
loved that show.
He always would make it look as though they're Bulgaria. You'd think they were in Bulgaria. You know, everything was shot in the guy's house.
Right.
So, I mean, the whole business has got to be re-engineered.
Now, to get back to NCIS for a second, do you watch it?
Yeah, I like NCIS. I think it's one of the best structured TV shows on the...
I like the NCIS Los Angeles, but anyway...
My wife likes that. I watch both of them. I don't always watch the Los Angeles one. It's a different show. It's more... Yeah. It reminds me more of Hawaii Five-O, which is a light, humorous drama.
Yeah. So... In NCIS, the main guy, what's his name, the boss, walks around with a cup of coffee constantly. Not labeled, by the way, so it's not a paid-for deal. Not yet, yeah. Constantly, right? Is there something wrong with his hand? I mean, he reminds me of Bob Dole a little bit with the pen.
You know, maybe. I don't know. Bob Dole with the pen.
I'm just saying.
I think Bob Dole would have probably got elected. If he, instead of a pen, he would have held a knife.
Yeah,
like
knife,
a big Bowie knife.
He could have coffee. I mean, the same thing.
Coffee. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, no, I just always wondered. It was just so right out there the whole time. Anyway, so Netflix has been, you know, revived from the dead. Stock was God knows what price. It came down to the 50s. And it's currently somewhere around the 180s, north of 180, 182, 185. Now, looking at the chart, if you look at the chart and you look at it in a couple of different ways, but when you look at it and see, okay, where has been the buying been done? Where's the volume? Where are the key component levels of where buying has been done? And do this analysis. If you kind of come below, and what happens is if you get below that level and there's a area that's a range we call a fast zone or a gap of low volume, kind of like a sinkhole.
Why did it jump up, by the way? It jumped up from like 100 to... Oh. No, this recent jump. It was last
year. Take a look at the chart. Gave you a chart on that
chart. I'm looking at it. It was at 100 and was floating around 100, looking pretty good. Then, boom, it jumped up to 145 or something.
Yeah, that was on an earnings announcement that they were better. And although the earnings was questionable, you know, whether the quality was there and whether or not they're going to continue.
I think it's a $100 stock, but that's...
If you look at the stock from a different perspective...
People love this company.
Yeah. And it's very thin float, very small float. So what happens is that a high short interest and a lot of volume can really squeeze this thing pretty well. But under the 179 area, and you can kind of almost draw a little line there, but if you look at this in a different way and look at kind of the X-ray of this or the MRI maybe, under 179 there's really light volume, meaning this kind of thing moved up, and it moved up pretty well on really pathetic volume.
You know what? I just came up with something.
Well, we'll have to share it then.
I think you should short it.
I'm going to. Yeah, I have it. I have it set up. I have it set up to go.
Here we go.
That would piss you off, wouldn't it?
No, because I'm thinking this has got the same magic that happened before, that the shorts will all get killed.
But they've been killed already.
Yeah, you're going to get killed. I wouldn't short it.
What's even funnier is...
And I successfully shorted it, by the way.
Yeah. Well, the best. That was unbelievable. You actually had the whole idea at the right time, perfectly executed, to short Apple, but... The way we play things, it didn't work out well.
I had shorted it a couple of times and missed it.
But Netflix, actually, some of the old-time shorts that just got their clocks cleaned on this thing, okay, like held the short from like, what was it, 600 to like 100 and said, maybe at this point it's time to go long, and then it went down to 50. Are in this and really trying to, you know, keep the banter
it's
up.
It's impossible.
And all that. Yep. So, I don't know. We're going to look at that, and I think that's an interesting place to maybe buy it a little bit there. So I'm gonna look at that, and I'm gonna put that on the list of my stocks today. And then the other thing I want to talk about is so South by Southwest. Well, there's two things. South by Southwest, if anything that you can fill us in on?
I didn't go.
I know, but you follow that stuff.
Yeah, I do. And Adam's over there. He's gone to a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh.
No, there's, and? You know, it's just a, it's a movie. It's a party. I don't know. It's just a big party. I don't, no, no, nothing that I know of importance has come out of that event in terms of tech.
Well, I mean, they haven't.
There's a bunch of, you know, some new blogs have started up, and there's a couple of websites, and there's a few little online things. It's just nothing, you know, a couple of new, I think a phone is showing up there. Eh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like more of a party. And what about the old...
$1,500 to get into that thing.
Wow. What happened to the old, remember the old show over in Vegas, the Comdex. Comdex. Is that, well, that's not going on anymore, is it?
No, no. That thing folded, and they said they were going on 1 year hiatus, and that was the end of it. I thought they must have been in the show business, because when you go on a 1 year hiatus, you never come back.
That's bad. That was. I mean, I went to like one or two of them. They were pretty back in the day. You know.
No, they were great. Was, yeah. CES has sucked all that into their show, and so it's right. You can still have a go to a big show if you want to really get squeezed.
Actually, I was looking at the Vegas numbers from the gambling revenues and all, and they were down about 19% year over year for Nevada and for Vegas. There was kind of a different number, you know, for the whole state versus Las Vegas versus Nevada. And also the Macau numbers were down pretty substantially. So we're a little bit have a short position on Las Vegas Sands. And not only that, the Las Vegas Sands has a lawsuit against them by some entity that's claiming some fraud of something. And just like Boeing, doesn't seem to want to budge. No budging thing. I mean, you know, it was down 1.5% today or something like that, and or, you know, something. And but this news doesn't seem to budge it, even though, you know, revenues are lighter and all that. So we'll see what happens. The last thing I want to ask you is about the sequestration that happened, you know, right after the last show, or a couple days after the last show. Bingo. Occurred, right? You know, the bill was signed that they're going to cut $89 billion coming up, and the potential for another, you know, few trillion dollars or so over the next number of years, or trillion and change. And the markets did nothing.
Right.
Is this like Y2K or something?
It kind of went up.
Yeah.
In fact, started the rally. Hello.
Yeah, good point. And actually started the dollar moving up, which is kind of...
even better.
Against the thesis of what happens with stocks and all that, because I mean, if the yen is going down and they're rallying in Asia, the yen goes, you know, value goes up, and they get killed over there. Ours goes up. You would think oil would get hurt. Really, it did for a day or so, a few days. You would think that commodities, gold hasn't been doing really that well.
Yeah, I think oil's rigged. Something's up again. They've been doing this. I think this is something's amiss with oil.
Well, Goldman is all over it, saying, "Hey, buy."
Yeah, well, they did that the last time, if you remember, when it was going to head to 200.
Yep. Oh, remember that? Oh, that was those were the days.
those were the days. And it was Goldman again on that, too. This guy's a creep.
But my question is, I mean, is it possible that people are, you know, investors have been like, hey, we're glad that this is going on because, you know what, it will get the U.S.'s debt situation in better shape? Is that kind of the undertone here? Because otherwise, you got to wonder. You know, you look at the defense stocks, which have a major cut coming, and they haven't flinched.
You know, somebody knows something that we don't know.
Yeah, that they'll reverse this. They'll that this is. I don't know. There's something very strange about, you know, the whole idea that there was. As a matter of fact, President Obama was out saying this would be so horrible for the economy. And usually stocks are a forward-looking indicator, right? That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
Six months in advance.
Yeah, this is obviously a good thing.
Good thing. Yeah.
All right.
So higher gas prices, lower money in your paycheck, and having a money cut from the budget for Medicare and all that is actually beneficial for stuff. Let me just write this down. Okay, got it. Just want to make sure in the future I have that.
Yeah, yeah. You can look. Put one of those Post-it things, a gluey one, on there.
Yep, right on the refrigerator.
Okay. Well, let's look at the stocks.
Let's do that. Actually, you have a winner. A couple winners.
Yeah. Finally.
You have Live Nation, which really did well on a couple of – I think there was an earnings announcement, but also Barron's had it on this weekend as one of the stocks that really should do well for all sorts of reasons. So Live Nation, why did you buy that? Let's see. Insider buying.
This is my thesis for the lazy man's way. That I'm trying to prove this, that the lazy man's way does have its moments.
You just ride the coattails.
You take a look at some insider. The guy owns the company. He's buying up as much stock as he can. If I had done that when Steve Ballmer was buying up all his Microsoft stock that made him a billionaire, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be in Paris in my own flat.
So you wouldn't talk to me if you were wealthy?
No, I would talk to you.
All right, thanks.
But I'd probably be having you handle my money, and I'd be one of those, you know, one of your fine customers grousing all the time.
What are we doing?
But you've actually topped me on this because I got Cree.
Cree was a big one also this week.
I'm at 18% plus. You came in second with Medbox.
Yeah, that was a quick in and out. I mean, that was like 3 days and over.
Yeah, well, anyway, so we've got a number of stocks that are up. But apparently the dog is my dog. Again, I didn't base this on insider trading. I'd base it on some knowledge of the industry, which is always a mistake. And I was short Yahoo. And I think it's still a good short, by the way, but it's not at 22 right now. I'll just let it see what happens.
Yeah, that's stopped out.
And I also made a mistake of shorting Walmart. So my shorts didn't work, but my longs worked.
Interesting. Walmart is interesting because they came out with this terrible memo. That was the worst February ever. All this. Then they come out with an earnings announcement that was okay and better. And then they come out with saying just today that February evened out and everything's fine. Like,
yeah, well, they got me with a whipsaw. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, what are they missing here?
Fine.
So,
I'll be stopped out of that.
So here's a couple things. So first of all, number one, this is a game that we play. I have to say it. We don't recommend or suggest buying or selling any of the securities we talk about. This is at your own risk. Play along if you like, but seek competent financial advice from your planner and make sure you understand that there's risky. And again, we're not telling you to do any of this, but we may own some of these stocks. My clients may own some of these stocks. John, somebody may own the stocks. Here's what I'm thinking. Netflix, because I don't have the luxury, although I maybe could, but I don't have the luxury of waiting till it gets in this game, waiting till it gets to under 179, although that's where I'd like to hit this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do that, but if not, I'm going to short it now. It's only a percent
okay,
or so.
Short it. Anyway. Good.
Okay. AIG. AIG, again, if you look at the chart, it used to be about, I don't know, $1,500
yeah.
if you do a split adjusted. But AIG is now, I think I told you this, is taken over as the number one holding for hedge funds.
Yeah. Didn't I go long on AIG a couple of shows ago?
I don't know. Maybe. Let's see the stopouts on the bottom. Nope. AMD.
Yeah, well, AMD is a good long now.
Yeah. So AIG, so here's my thesis on this, that it's had a nice run. But if there is a correction, if this is a great place to be, because what happens is that everybody heads to the door at the same place.
Yeah, no,
I time.
Agree with you. I think you have a good shot at nailing this one.
And it's the same thing as we saw just 2 days ago when Bloomberg announced that hedge funds and institutions have sold the most incredible amounts of oil and taken their gold positions down. Every single time you see something like that, or the opposite, it's like time to get in, because when these guys move in or out, it makes big waves.
Yeah.
So you can kind of catch it in between.
Right.
You have any insider trading?
Well,
not trading.
Well, I got two picks I want to do. I want to do Netflix long.
Oh, boy. I don't think – have we ever done that?
Netflix long?
Head-to-head?
No, we haven't. This will be a first.
Oh, I like it.
It'll be a mano a mano.
That's good. What else you got? This is just to what's the rationale?
I wrote a positive thing. I think it's a company that's – I think it's because – I don't think it's lost its mojo yet. That's the reason. Put in a mojo.
Mojo.
I don't think it's worth this money. I agree with you. And it probably should be down to 100. It should fall back down and knock me out of this position quickly. But I think it's a magic stock, and I think I'm in.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. NS.
National Semiconductor?
No. NuStar Energy.
Oh, I know that company.
Oil and gas pipelines.
Yep. That one had a real good run, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was on one of my lists for a while. We were looking at it. It was, I think this is the one.
And this has got insider buying again.
It was, you're almost at, let's see here. Let me look at the longer term chart here. Actually, this is, I don't know if this is the one. I'm thinking of a different stock.
Okay.
NUE. I'm thinking of NUE, I think.
Oh, that's different, yeah. Would
is
be.
Is that another NuStar or something like that? Let me see.
Maybe.
NUE. Yeah, NuStar. NuCore. I'm not thinking of that one either. I don't know what I'm thinking of. But anyway, okay, so this one is in the energy business. Let's see here. Okay, so let's see who they're competing against. The terminaling store. Oh, terminaling and storage, transportation of ammonia, petroleum refining market, transportation and asphalt, and also they have terminals, 21 associated terminals. They have a capacity of only 14,000 barrels a day. And purchased oil pipeline. They have the Eagle Ford Shale, which is good. Camelot. Oh, wait. Company and Sol is in to Camelot. Oh, Camelot's done very well lately. And let's see here. Carbon disclosures. Okay. Yeah. The stock look. The chart doesn't look so good, though. You know that.
Well, the chart doesn't look good, but if you just look at the chart from if you cut it off and don't look at what happened when it went down. It doesn't look that bad, and I still think that there's – I think, again, it's insiders buying.
Who is the guy that's buying?
Let me have to go back and look.
It's not Rosier, is it?
No. It's one of the directors, Greehy, and he's been
– Greehy, he's the main guy.
And he's been buying and buying and buying, but he's been consistently buying, but he's now – looks like he's – picking up, he's just picking up some couple million. He just picked up a couple million shares. No, I'm sorry. Nice. No, he only picked up. No, over this last couple of years, he's picked up a half a million, but he's got 2.1 overall, and he's not selling. That's the point.
Right. Yeah, you have. He's a chairman of the board, so he must have some good feeling.
It would seem to me that when the chairman of the board, unless he's just trying to showboat,
right?
I think he's out of money. Look at this buying pattern.
almost a $4 billion company, actually. Light volume, about 300,000 shares a day. EPS is a negative 3, whatever that means. I guess they're losing money here, right? Let's see. Net profit margin, negative 3%. How can they be losing money, these guys?
Well,
I'm trying to see who they're competing against. Magellan Midstream, Oil Tank Partners... New Star GP Holdings, which is actually William Greehy also, I think. Is he buying that company?
I don't know.
Let's see. Greeley, yep. That one's against some companies you may know, like Sunoco Logistics, Buckeye Partners. How's this chart looking? Yeah, just as bad. Same chart, both rolling over. Interesting. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is one of my long shot insider buys, but it just seems suspicious to me. So
I hear you,
because it was like down in the 50s. He didn't do anything, and then it went way up, and
he's been buying. I'll just to let you know that this week we also have. Retail sales coming out on Wednesday. Should be exciting. 8:30 in the morning comes out. We have University of Michigan at the end of the week, which is very important. CPI, PPI as well. And we'll see how that all plays out. And if, in fact, the consumer is continuing to be as resilient as analysts think they are. So if I talked over you, I'm sorry. You cut out for a second. So I was stretching.
Oh, no. No. For some unknown reason, after we get to about 50 minutes, the connection starts to fall apart. They got some sort of a thing that they're doing. Anyway, yep. I think that should be it for this.
That is it. Wraps it up.
And the big challenge, of course, is what happens with Netflix.
Yes, you're on.
In the next, we got 18 points either way. We'll see what happens. It's going to go up or down. It's not staying there, that's for sure.
We'll see what happens. All right, I'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.